Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy wherever they get their podcasts. The sound of endurance racing
around the world.
This is RS1, part of the Radio Show Limited Network.
G'day everyone, welcome to another episode of On The Grid. Great to have your company wherever you might be listening. Tony Shebeki is still on gardening leave or assignment, whatever. I can't remember what excuse we came up with last week was. But anyway, I'm filling in for him for another week. I'm joined by Mark Walker. Mark, not only did you have a weekend on the couch watching motor racing, but you went to some live motor racing as well.
Oh, we worked on the groove, and then there was a bit of a groove development at Noyora Speedway. We went out there and saw Cameron Waters rip it up in his sprint car, which was a very good bit of fun.
Check out the full story and photos on theracetalk.com for that. AWC Race Tasmania was the headline act on the weekend. Coming up, we've got Tim Macro, who leads the Australian Drivers' Championship. And a little bit later on, we'll hear from Jack LeBrock, who's unveiled the new Truck Assist Racing supercar for Matt Stone Racing with Todd Hazelwood. We look forward to previewing that. Bit of a dark horse for strong results in supercars this year. But Race Tas was the big deal. It's a massive event. I think it's the only way you can explain what was going on down there at Simmons Plains Raceway. And delighted to say, joining us on the grid is one of Stan Sport's absolute gurus from the broadcast, patrolling pit lane and delivered some fine content, the one and only Chris Stubbs joins us on the grid. G'day, Stubbsy. Welcome to the show.
Gentlemen, how are you both?
Extremely well. All the better for talking to you again, my friend. We, let's be honest, had a pretty good weekend down at Simmons Plains, didn't we? Nice to be back at the racetrack.
When is it not a good weekend at Simmons Plains? Anytime you go to Tassie, God's country, mate, it's where only the best are bred. And it was a fantastic to get back there. On a personal note, that is where I grew up. It was the track I went to and fell in love with motorsport and had the posters on the wall and used to line up like every other kid and try to get the autographs and the pictures and absolutely loved it. So anytime I get to go back there is great, and to have racing back on track and the fans there and the weather was great. And we'll talk a little bit more, I'm sure, about the on-track action and sometimes, unfortunately, the lack thereof. But what we saw on track was absolutely outstanding.
Yes. Yes, it was. And from home, obviously, you know, big weekend for the sport, you know, the big move to Stan Sport. We've analysed this in depth previously, but, you know, clearly the production values, everything, all the on-air talent, they're all very familiar to any punter at home watching. So it was slick. It was what you expect from the people putting it together. So that was great, but you're right. It was just frustrating so many times. The races were just interrupted. There was carnage and all sorts of things going on. And it just sort of snowballed. You'd have an unfortunate crash and then there'd be a slow recovery because there'd be something, you know, the brakes would bind on Nash Morris's Trans Am car or something silly like that would happen. Or you have a car stuck out there on a flatbed between sessions when it should be back in the workshop being dealt with. So it was just lots of little things like that. They were just a bit frustrating. But yeah, you're right. When the cars are out there racing, it was sensational.
Stubbsy, did you have a favourite moment that stood out? And you delivered some fine content on the weekend. Your full newsman mode when you were trying to grab James Moffat in race two of Super Chip Auto TCR. That was the firm don't argue from Moff, but you were persistent. I like that.
Look, I hate that stuff. To be honest, yeah. I hate that stuff because you've got enormous respect for the drivers and for the guys. Moff and I get on great with knowing each other for a long time, and you don't want to be up in their grill. They've just had a massive stack. You know that just by looking at the car that he's likely to be out for the rest of the day. And it's fair to say he can be a little, what's the term for
prickly.
Prickly, emotional. I was going to go emotional. You said prickly. So that's your words, not mine. I think I said on the broadcast on the weekend that he in the past has at times been a bit hot-headed. Yes. So I'll probably stand by that. I don't think he'd be too offended by that. So I didn't really want to do that. But for the viewers at home, you want to understand the emotion of the moment. And I think he handled it pretty well. In his defense, to just say, look, I'm not going to talk. And obviously later on, he did, once he'd calmed down and been able to assess the situation, he came on and was great in commentary, wasn't he? So he's a natural media performer. And he was just filthy mad. We saw the exchange with Troy Russell there from MPC. And you knew that if he did speak to me, he probably wasn't going to cover himself in a lot of glory and probably end up getting a fine or something like that. So I understand why he didn't want to. I was disappointed. I would have loved to have been able to bring it to the fans at home in the heat of the moment and hear exactly how he was feeling and get his take. But he delivered it to us later on. So a bit of theatre never goes astray. But, it's not always the most comfortable situation.
So what's everyone's take on that incident? Because it was a contentious move, wasn't it? Jay Hansen obviously came up trumps at the start of the weekend and it all sort of unravelled there with that move on Moff in that reverse grid race. It's hard. It was a bit of a 50-50. I don't think you can entirely attribute all the blame to one person.
Look, there was, I think, a bit of an opening there for Jay, and good on him. He had his tail up. The confidence was there, wasn't it, after the win the day before? He had that brand-new Audi that looked so tough, didn't it? Probably thought he could get through any gap with that. And clearly he was following on from in front. But I think the initial replays don't look great. Whether it's hard to know without the data and knowing if there are any issues with steering or who was on the gas and who was on the brakes at what points in the contact. It just didn't look like he was trying to turn left too much after the initial contact. So, and the damage spoke for itself. That was my take. Richard, what was your take? Yeah. Initially, it didn't look great.
No, it didn't. And my initial reaction to probably any crash like that where one car continues on and the other one ends up parked in a fence with lots of damage is that the one that tends to continue on is probably going to be more likely to be at fault in an incident like that. But we replayed it a dozen times and from as many different angles as we had, and there was no official wording that it was anyone at fault after it from Alex Davison, who was driving standards boss for the weekend and indeed for the season. He's a guy that knows motor racing as well as anybody and has been in his fair share of moments like that, so he can interpret them. The problem with it was that it started so far back. I mean, that it really all started teeing off at turn six when they were going under brakes, and as a result of being passed, Moff was offline and Hansen saw the opportunity to go through, and it all, like they do it, Simmons Plains, the bullring that it is. I think I used the analogy, it's like you throw the stone in the pond and the ripples come out, and you make a move at turn four and it doesn't pay off until you get to turn seven quite often. And that's what we saw. Much rather be in a position where you're Dylan O'Keefe v Jordan Cox. It was the Tilton Racing Car, wasn't it? Brad Shields a bit later on. And that was clearly Brad with a wheel up on the curb on the inside, got into the rear corner of Dylan and turned him round. Much easier to make a call on that. Whereas I agree with you guys. I think it's probably more 50-50. And the problem is it wouldn't have been so bad. Have Moff been caught in the gravel trap and stuck there and not made contact with the fence, everyone probably would have been more accepting. And you go, okay, well, two cars side by side, one of them came off worse than the other. But because there was so much damage and it was such a big crash and there was so much heat around it in the pit lane as well, I think it probably just added to the discussion from what it really was. Mark?
Is there something to be said for that new Audi? It seems like a pretty good mousetrap.
Yeah. Well, I think the interesting thing, boys, is that there was no BOP adjustments on TCR at that round. The global balance of performance rules hadn't been in place because there hasn't been that much racing. So when they feed all the data in from Simmons Plains to the global spreadsheet that they use to generate the BOP for TCR, Audi's going to look at that and go, gee, one race won by 5 seconds. We're going to give this thing 50 kilos at the next round. So it could inadvertently hurt the Audis racing anywhere around the world. But didn't he drive well? And Stubbsy, that was one of the things for mine calling TCR for the first time, was the young guns popping at the front. So Zach Suter, I thought, was outstanding. Jay Hansen, crash aside, was really, really strong. Bailey Sweeney in the Hyundai, I thought, did a superb job. That's one of the cool storylines, isn't it, in TCR, where you're getting these young talent racing guys like Moff and Will Brown and people that have been proven to do the job.
Zach Suter was awesome. Wasn't he outstanding? And considering the Hondas were so bad there 12 months ago, he was really, really impressive because I think, from memory, he was fastest on Friday too in practice, wasn't he? So across the weekend, he was consistently quick. And as a privateer team, that's just a phenomenal result. And he's pretty young still, isn't he? And on the way up, great family. The family connection's obviously there. And I think it's just a team that can really show something over the next few rounds. And at home, I guess you could call it, at Phillip Island in a Victorian race anyway, that he knows that track well. So looking forward to see what the Honda, the whole when we get to Phillip Island.
The one thing that I like about TCR is that you get these underdog winners come through. We've got some really good established names in the class, but you get a young guy like Zach Suter, second season out there, and he's sticking to the man.
I thought Bailey was really good as well.
Actually, on that, I've had this before. I've had it before, and you know exactly where I'm going with this. When you interview a very excited person on the podium and they absolutely drop an F-bomb on you, your recovery, sir, was a lot better than mine.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to calm him down and let him know. That's why I said I will bleep that out just to kind of try and relax him, knowing full well that it was already going to air and that there was nothing that we could do about that. So, look, that's the passion of the sport. It's the emotion. You can see what it means to the young guy. So, obviously, his first round of the Super Cheap Auto TCR Racing, and I thought he was fantastic. The Hyundais in general, weren't they? They were a real step up. I thought they were good. Nathan Morecambe on the podium in the first race of the weekend, and that team looks great. Yeah. So I think they're back. The champion team from 2019, they're back in business.
It's a really genuinely good field, though, isn't it, Stubbsy? And I feel like this is the best it's been since TCR came into inception. And we've had some really good talent in the field over the last couple of years. But just you sit back and look at it as a broad product, and you mentioned the level of presentation for the Hyundais. Completely agree. Among the best-looking touring cars around at the moment. And you go beyond that and just the level of depth. The Will Brown comes in. You've got our mate Michael Caruso battling away. You've got the potential of Fabian Coulthard coming in, doing some more in the Honda. Tony D'Alberto's fast. It just feels like a genuinely, broadly competitive field and the best perhaps that TCR's been.
Couldn't agree more. And I like the format, the reverse grid in, you know, throwing that in the middle. It just keeps everyone fresh, keeps everyone on their toes. No one's dominating, which I think a few of us thought Will Brown, when he came back, might be a little bit of the Chaz Mostert's from last year, and that he might find it a pretty comfortable situation to be in, but that certainly wasn't the case. Jordan Cox didn't help himself, did he, early on the weekend? He's one of the, I think, the title favourites for this year. And Aaron Cameron as well wasn't really on fire across the weekend, not far off the pace, but they're two guys that you'd certainly expect to step up at Phillip Island and beyond. So for mine, I reckon there's a good 8 people at least that could probably win the title. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would. The thing I like as well, and you mentioned Aaron Cameron and Jordan Cox, and the thing I like about where we're going with TCR now is that we're starting to build those little rivalries and build the personalities. And I think that's what's going to drive this series forward into a bit more prominence than anything else, is just having a little bit of niggle, having some bigger personalities in it. Bailey dropping the F-bomb, I thought that was his Scott McLaughlin moment, wasn't it, at the Adelaide 500. But the moment that Jordan Cox and Aaron Cameron started on the front row in race two, every single person in that paddock went, oh, this is going to be great. And it was, and they banged doors through turn one and two, and it was unfortunate that Aaron's car dropped a turbo intercooler pipe, but because they would have boxed on, because they're two drivers that are never backwards in coming forward. They've got great racecraft, great speed. And I think the more of that we see in TCR, it's only going to help the categories rise to becoming something more than what it already is.
Yeah, and there's such a great bunch of people in that paddock. They seem to be really authentic. A lot of them have done it the hard way in their motorsport. A guy like Aaron Cameron is a concreter on the weekend and he's just plying his trade. He's such an honest, decent guy. And I'm really looking forward to this year trying to develop those personalities and show them off a bit more and give these young guys some profile, because Coxie as well, he's a great talker, a really, really engaging character. And I hope we can really put that to the fore this year. I mean, Aaron on the weekend, he had that busted radius, the bone in his arm, and did from the mountain bike riding. He was incredibly sore, especially after Saturday's race. So I know before I said he wasn't right on the pace, so that could well be a part of the reason for it. But really, really good guys. Jay Hansen, what an outstanding young kid who's just continuing to grow in his confidence. And, you know, they're keeping the older guys like Tony D, Caruso, Coulthard, the ones you mentioned earlier, they're keeping them honest. And that's what I love. It's that mix. And I think that's what fans are engaging with too.
Just quickly, wrapping up on TCR, my favourite moment of the weekend was Will Brown v Tony D'Alberto on the final lap there, where Swill had two wheels off on the grass and there was zero. At no point did anyone think he was going to lift out of that. No one. We all know Will long enough that he was going to keep it flat, whether he had two wheels on the grass or all four. But at the same point, I love that Tony gave no room and he was absolutely committed to finishing third for Honda there. I thought that was such a cool piece of motor racing.
Couldn't agree more. And Will across the weekend, you know, we always talk about the smile and his personality, and he's the little loungy, if you like. But I'll tell you what, as soon as the visor's down, it's game on with Will. He will not take a backward step, and he was straight up to the fence after the Moff crash, just checking the repairs to see how long it was going to be, chatting away to Tom, which was great to see Tom Moore, his engineer, obviously from Erebus there too. So it's just a great bunch of people, and it was just so good to be back at the track.
Oh, wasn't it? It was so good. Quick word to Trans Am. We've got Tim Macro to join us a little bit later on to talk S5000 and the old bloke beating all the youngsters in that category, which is tremendous. But Trans Am was extremely frustrating, I think we can all agree, because there's so much boys' built-in potential in that category to be extraordinary this year, with a depth of talent, some really good surnames, a lot of second and third generation surnames that have been well documented. But it just never quite fired on the weekend. I'm hoping we get to Phillip Island and we see what that category can put on. We see what Nathan Hearn and Aaron Seaton delivered at East of Bathurst at the 6 hour last year, which were just three unbelievably competitive races. Just didn't quite fire on the weekend, Mark, did it? Not quite.
And that third race, first corner pile up, that was just such a shame. It took out so many of the good guys that would have boxed on in that race. It's one of those tracks, isn't it? You've got the long straights, tight corners, and it produces all this sort of shenanigans under brakes, which, you know, it started in race one when John McCorkendale went spearing into the back of Nash Morris, and then Tim Shaw came unstuck and smashed into the fence. Although my favourite bit of TV for the whole weekend was the finger waggle from Tim Shaw walking back to the... It was just cut perfectly to him just before he's produced the finger. They must have known exactly what was going to happen back there in the box.
Brian did nice work there, Stubbsy. Brian Forshaw, the director, didn't he?
Yeah, he sure did. There was a fair bit of emotion around that one. And him obviously being an icon of motorsport in Tasmania would have been wanting to put on a show for the home fans. So he would have been incredibly disappointed. And his son's involved in the mix there as well. So, yeah, he would have been very disappointed. But like you said, the family lineage is great. I thought Kyle Girton on the weekend was outstanding. He was pretty consistent last year as well, but he just this weekend so far has taken that next step. And another one of these young guys that you talk about that has got a great personality. I know he's been doing a bit of work, a bit of media training. He's very committed to just building everything together as a racer, and I love that. And I thought he did a great job on the track and also in interviews, etc. So Brooksy, he's great, isn't he? He knows exactly what he's doing behind a wheel, and commercially he's got the whole package together. Wall Racing did a great job there, and hopefully, maybe we can see those three have the battles like we saw with Seaton in the mix last year, because it was outstanding. When it was good, it was very, very good Trans Am last year.
Yeah, and final word, Jet Johnson. I reckon he did a really, really nice control job for a kid that's really only raced Hyundai XLs. And with the weight of everything on his shoulders, with that surname and indeed the number that he's carrying, I thought that was a really cool little moment to be P5 in that last race.
Yeah, for sure. In the feature, did you talk to him for that, Stubbsy?
No,
I didn't talk to Jet.
Because he spoke so well, and there's absolutely no doubt which family he's from. You can just see there's so much Queensland in all that. he set himself up there, but he did a neat job, and he was one that stayed out of trouble all weekend long.
That might have been a Molly Taylor piece. No, Stubbsy, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. We'd love to get you on a little bit more regularly, if time permits for you this year. We know you're a busy man with everything you've got going on. I know you've been bouncing back and forth from Olympic Games and all sorts of stuff, but we love having you part of it. Just a word, and we don't want to pat our own back too much, but really cool group of people, isn't it, behind the scenes on this Stan Sport TV coverage. I thought Molly Taylor had a career best weekend in front of the camera for her. Matt White, who is the pro of pros, when it comes to hosting a broadcast, I think he's just such a guru at the sport. And then old mate Caruso bobbing in and out of the race car, I thought he was pretty solid as well.
No, I couldn't agree more, Molly. You can see why she's been so successful behind the wheel. She's very diligent. You know, she's making sure she's learning the whole time. From day one, she's been asking questions of everyone to try and better herself. And I think that speaks volumes in how she's progressed. And as I said, I think that's why maybe she's been so successful as a driver. You're right, Caruso brings character. He got Moff to chat when I couldn't. Matty's such a pro. He loves his motorsport. It's great to have him back in the lane. And he just oozes confidence, doesn't he? It's just he's so calm and he just loves what he's talking about. And it's just an outstanding crew both on and off.
We'd love for you to join us and watch it at some point throughout the year if you can. Stubbsy, thanks so much for joining us, mate. Appreciate it. Look forward to doing it all again down at the Phillip Island Grand Prix Circuit in what isn't that many weeks away from now.
Absolutely can't wait. And, of course, the guys in the commentary box, they do an all right job as well. You're,
you're listening to On The Grid, wherever you get your great podcast from, or on the Radio Show Limited Network's RS1. And thanks to all of our international audience for joining us and firing the odd question through about what we're doing down here in Australia. We do appreciate that, and we'll do a Q&A, Mark, at some point later this season, focused on the RS1 audience for those that might have some supercar questions or want a specific driver on. We'll work on that. But positive early feedback, I think, from our debut so far this year.
Oh, the voiceover man at the start's come back for 3 weeks in a row, so I think we must be doing something right.
Keep paying the retainer there. It sounds good. Speaking of sounding good, the results for our next guest were on the weekend as well. And as he searches a third Australian Drivers' Championship to join the likes of John McCormack, Paul Stokel and 1M Scaife, Tim Macro found himself leading the championship after the opening round of S5000 thanks to a mighty win in the feature race on Sunday afternoon. He joins us on the grid now. Tim, congratulations. Not bad for an old bloke, my friend.
I knew you were going to say that. Thanks, Krause. I appreciate it. Yeah, getting on a bit, but I've still got a little bit by the looks of it.
Clearly.
So, no, we had a ripper weekend in the end. It was a bit of a slow start, as it's been accustomed to lately. But, you know, we really finished it off and the team did a great job.
Yeah, so your qualifying's not much chop, mate. What's the deal there to fix that?
Well, we actually had a couple little issues earlier in the weekend with brakes, which we only got really sorted out on Saturday night. And I actually went out in race two with new pads all round, which is not really the done thing. So we're lucky to get away with that. But, yeah, we got that sort of half sorted and made a couple little changes on Saturday night, which really made the thing a lot better. And it showed in the last two races because we had pretty good pace.
Now, you're a sole lone operator out there, one car operation. You're up against the might of Team BRM and Gary Rogers Motorsport. Mm-hmm. Must be pretty cool to get that win up.
Oh, it's really satisfying. And, you know, doing it with one car is doing it the hard way. Like, it'd be really good to have a couple of good teammates to bounce off. And that really fast tracks things like setup, which is probably where, you know, we're probably a little bit slower just because we are one car in getting to where we need to go. But it's really satisfying and it shows we can do the job. Like we're only a little team, but we're really professional in what we do and we try to operate and we do operate at their level. And, you know, GRM and BRM are teams that, you know, in open wheel racing, BRM in particular, you know, to aspire to. And, you know, we're on a par with those guys for sure.
You've made a knack of making the reverse grid or the jumble grid race pay off for you in terms of a good result, but then it helps your point score so much for that final race grid, doesn't it? So it's such an important part of the weekend to nail the execution there, which you did in finishing second to Josh Fyfe, who I thought drove very, very well in Albert Kelleher's car to win that race. It's such a big part of the weekend, isn't it, to nail that, to roll onto the feature and start as high up as you can.
Absolutely. It's all about consistency and, you know, and that race, you know, you've just got to try and finish in the top four or five. And if you can do that all year, you know, you'll be in the first one or two rows for the final. And, you know, the points system this year is heavily weighted to the final. So you've just got to be on the podium. If you can be on the podium in every race, you'll win this championship. And the reverse grid is really, really important. So, you know, you've got to be in that top 75% to take advantage of that. So you've got to basically be in the top five for the whole year. And, you know, it'll really pay off.
Now, we saw lap times really come down over the weekend. Where was the gain in 12 months?
Well, I think the track had a lot more grip than last year. Like, you'll notice last year, we were only really starting to get really quick in the last race, and I think the place was pretty green. And this year, I think they've had the Marcus Ambrose thing only a week or two ago, and a little bit of club racing, I think, has been going on, and it really shows with the track speed. So, because we were fast out the gate on Thursday, you know, straight into the 49s and 48s. So I think the track condition was a lot better. And if you sort of overlap it with last year's final, I think we got down into the 49s in last year's final just so the track was only starting to come good. So I think it's a bit of a pandemic thing.
The second lap on a 48-second lap, though, that's a big chunk of time to find.
Yep.
I heard some discussions that maybe the changes made to the cars for Bathurst last year around the airbox, get a bit more air in, maybe a little bit more grunt. Did that play a role, do you think, at all?
You have to ask Rog that one, who builds the engines. But, yeah, look, that airbox has definitely got to be better. It can't not be. It's Ram air. So, It's probably got a little bit more power, but I think also we didn't run traction control this year.
Yep.
And so it's up to our right foot. And, you know, the traction control was okay, but it was probably a little intrusive. And I think, yeah, we're definitely quicker without it. So I think that's played a part as well.
Which leads me to my next point is the next stop's the Phillip Island Grand Prix circuit. And it's a venue that I know you in particular would dearly love to walk away with the outright lap record in, which is still to this day held by Simon Wheels in a Barana Racing Reynard 94.
I got within a tenth. Well, the F3 car.
We should tell that story quickly because you basically threw away, you didn't throw away race win because you won the race, but you just put all your eggs in the basket of going out and breaking a lap record, didn't you?
Yeah, we tried. I got in a tow, I think it was behind Magro, I think, trying to just get it over the line. And we got, what did we do, a two? We were under it in quali, but quali doesn't count.
Yeah.
So I think we did like a 0.08 or something, a 24.08 in quali or something like that. But and we did a 24.2, so we were really close. You know, mind you, the track was, the track surface had just been relayed, so that made it look a little bit better than it was. But, I mean, it was pretty good to get that close in a little car like that. And, I mean, if the weather plays its part, which who knows what Phillip Island's going to do, you know, we might be lucky enough to get close this year. We'll just have to see how, if the weather, you know, plays its part.
Yeah, Richard, this one's probably more for yourself. One of the big talking points of the weekend was that first corner clash between Team BRM drivers, Tim Slade, the guest driver for the weekend, and Joey Mawson, the guy who's going for the title. That could have ramifications down the road.
Yeah, it could. The person that got a lot out of it was talking to us on the chat as well, though, because two pretty key rivals that were on the pace all weekend just removed from the equation.
Yeah, I was really unhappy when I saw when I drove past the next.
Yeah, look, it was awkward, and there's no doubt about that. It was very, very awkward. And yep, Joey came down across on Tim, but Tim was up on that inside curb there, and there was really no, there wasn't an S5000 with there, so. I think they both, in the end, went and shook hands and Tim mea culpa'd a little bit, I think, and away we go. But the most important thing for mine, and I know Tim would prefer Joey gets no points from that race, but from a show point of view, it was so good to see them get back out. And Tim, you've been part of great race teams. You've got a great race team. The group of people that work for you are tremendous in Brandon and Barry and everyone. But for BRM to turn around that car in what was about 35 minutes to put two corners on it, an under tray and a front wing, just it's remarkable stuff, isn't it, to get that effort. And professional racing teams just never disappoint when it comes down to the crunch.
No, it's impressive. And like looking at that thing when it got dropped off the tilt tray, you know, 35, 40 minutes before the start of race three, you kind of thought they'd have no chance. But, I mean, Shano and all the boys there do a pretty good job. And you know, I've been involved with them in the past and you know, they do a ripper job on the cars and they're all ready to go. And, you know, hats off to them because that there was a lot of work to be done to get that thing back out there.
How relatively hard or easy are these cars to work on?
They're, like, compared to a sedan, you know, they're easy. Like, in that, you know, you can just bolt corners onto them like an open wheeler car, which is really good, you know. And, you know, they're actually really quick to do things on. You know, when you start doing things, you know, in the engine bay, they can get a little bit more complicated. Like we had a slight issue which nearly stopped us from getting out in race two with the header tank. We found a crack in it and the water leak, and that was took a little while to get sorted, but we got it done probably 3-4 minutes before we were due out of pit lane. So when it gets into the engine bay, it can get a little bit more complicated. But when you're bolting corners on, these cars are to work on a second to none. And but still, you've got to know where the settings have got to be on those arms to put them in the right spot so the car's pointing in the right direction. And all those guys would have had all that sort of sorted from their measurements in their books before they even got there. So that's why they could do it quick.
The thing for mine, I think that we forget sometimes that this category's been around for such a long time and the genesis of it for even longer. But in reality, we had 6 race meetings last year. We had 2 non-championship rounds in 2019, and we had a qualifying session and a practice at the Grand Prix in 2020. That's it. That's all the categories run. So how are you going from a development point of view? Are you still having moments where you're going, ah, that's new, that works, and clearly you're finding out more about these cars every time you jump into them?
And that's what's a shame about the category, and I know people expect a lot. And look, we only had, you know, nearly 10 cars on the grid on the weekend, but because of what's happened in the last couple of years, the category hasn't had a chance. Like, we had so much momentum. You were there at Sandown. We had, you know, we had a massive crowd at Sandown just to see these cars. And since then, it's just never had a chance to really get off the ground. So for it to still sort of be in some sort of operation and things looking up, you know, the ARG are doing a fantastic job to make that happen. And I know more cars will come online as we get to Phillip Island Grand Prix and onwards. But getting back to sort of with the car, like, yeah, obviously we are still, you know, finding little things, but we've got it. They're pretty much in a window now, but, you know, at that circuit in particular, like, I was fifth and only a tenth or two off the pace. So, you know, you find like a little thing here and there, and you're at Bathurst. Like, I mean, I was only 4 tenths off pole around a 2 minute lap, and I was sixth. So, you know, those little things just to get you that extra tenth or that little bit of turn or that little bit of braking stability, you know, we're still finding a couple of things here and there.
You mentioned grids, and you've talked about expanding your operation in the past. Are there any prospects? What's the thoughts and feelings there?
Absolutely. Hopefully we'll have a second car on the grid for Phillip Island. We've done a little bit of testing with some kids over Christmas, which you might have seen online, some video and stuff that we did. So that's more probably looking towards next year. But we've got a couple other drivers who are really keen to start off at Phillip Island and then maybe three at the Grand Prix. But to be honest, like, I'm still driving and all that sort of stuff and organising the team. Probably two's enough for us right now, but we can run three if it's a local round if we need to. So definitely things are heading at that direction, and that'll be really good for us and really good for the category as well.
And speaking of other drivers, Tim, this weekend coming up is the opening round of Australian Formula 3 at Eastern Creek, well, Sydney Motorsport Park, with the AMRS series. Mm-hmm. And Tim Macro Racing there has a veritable fleet, more than you ever ran when you were in Formula 3 yourself. Yeah. It's been a little bit of a surprise that people are gravitating back to these cars after some time in the wilderness, and a pretty handy little field gathering up there this weekend.
And they're really good cars. And, you know, I'm trying to, and I've spoken to you about this before, Krause, I'm trying to sort of create a pathway for the kids coming out through Formula Ford, my little Formula BMW, my Sim, my F3 cars as well, which are still really relevant cars. And I'm running three cars on the weekend. It would have been four, but I'm still waiting on another car out of England. And there'll be 10, 11 solid cars on the grid, and that'll expand to 15 at different rounds. So the category's on the up, and, you know, it's on a good trajectory. And, you know, I've got a really good kid in young Ben Taylor. I've got Trent Grubel running in a new car as well. So we've got some really good sort of talent coming through the category, and it's looking really, really good. So I'm really excited for this weekend, actually.
They're not the newest cars, but that probably brings affordability back into it.
It does, yeah.
On the flip side of that, how is going getting parts and that sort of thing for them?
Oh, that's the best part. Like, I run 2011 cars, and I can manufacture my own parts, but it's not, you know, a set category. Yep. But also I can still buy stuff directly off Dallara if I want. And I've got enough bits to rebuild the cars four or five times. So, and that's why we've sort of stuck with those earlier cars, because, okay, they haven't got halos, but they're still relevant. And the car after that actually sort of started heading towards a spec car in that direction. It was actually the peak of Formula 3 was the F311, which is what we're running. And they're the fastest car still. They're faster than the 12 to 17s. So, you know, the 12 was very close, very similar pace, but, you know, the cars are cheaper to run the earlier cars. So there's pros and cons. So that's why they've sort of gotten to the, say, F312 era and sort of haven't gone further. But in the next couple of years, we're going to have to transition to halos, clearly. And with the F312 cars, you can actually update those cars to halos. So we are slowly moving in that direction. We're just trying to get the actual field and the category back on its feet where it should be, and then we can sort of start progressing in that direction.
And the other thing I wanted to talk about, one of the many pies you've got fingers in, is a little concept called Formula Open. And this debuted at the end of 2020. We had that race meeting at Sandown where Porsche put a grid of cars together. And you organised a grid of what was open wheelers predominantly, a couple of sports cars as well. Basically Formula Libra, but a really cool mix of interesting racing cars. And you sit back and look at it and go, gee, it's a good little concept, and it could evolve into something perhaps that bring some really cool wings and slicks cars, old Formula Holdens, Indy cars, whatever it might be, to some decent motor racing events. Is that where you're heading with that?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, it's some cars don't have a home. Like, I had a Formula Holden here for a little while, which we just sold, and that car hasn't got a home to race, and it's a beautiful car. Like, they're amazing. But with Formula Open, it just gives, you know, a chance at a state level and at an affordable level to have a wings and slicks car and race it. And there was nowhere in Victoria really to do that. It's sort of funny. I sort of fell into it at the end of 2020 when at that Porsche event, they asked me to sort of organise something. It was the MG Car Club who actually asked me to do it. And so this year it sort of progressed. We're going to run a one-day race meeting at Pyark for their 70th anniversary. And I've actually organised a Formula 5000 race as well, believe, right. Between you and me.
You heard it here first.
So there's going to be 12 or 13 genuine 1970s Formula 5000s on the grid, which is going to be awesome. So get down there for that race meeting on the 27th of March. But we're going to have Formula Open as well. So we're going to have a mixture of F3 cars. The little hyper races are coming out. We may have some radicals and stuff as well, some open top sports cars that'll be on the grid as well, but it's going to be a really good mix. And then we're going to do one more race meeting. Maybe two more, actually. We're going to definitely do a state round at Sandown as well again. And because we had during the pandemic, we had 18 cars signed up before it got cancelled. So that's really positive. So I'll probably have five or six cars running in Formula Open throughout the year. And then we're going to do a third race meeting, which we'll, you know, probably announce in due course and to finish the year off. So I think three is enough. Mm-hmm. And then we've got, you know, six or seven F3 races as well. So plus S5000, which will probably be nine races this year. So it's going to be a bit of a busy calendar. Plus, you know, I haven't really said much, but I'm going overseas throughout the year as well to do some racing as well. So it's going to be a busy year.
Okay, righto. Yeah, I'm free. Don't worry about me. I've got nothing going on.
No, I mean, I'm getting to do some cool stuff. I'm actually going over to do Spa Classic in a Group C car and nice. Le Mans Classic. So I'm really looking forward to that. And, I mean, we're starting a Formula Ford program as well. You know, one of the young ladies I've actually had in the sim, is we've just bought a Formula Ford and we're going to start running that at state level at some point during the year. So I have to start employing people. Oh, crazy.
Geez, righto. I was going to say about the Formula Open, like they've had similar concepts up in Queensland and they've gone really well. There's not necessarily a big open wheel culture up there, but there's lots of these guys in this situation who have cars that don't necessarily fit in a home. But you wind up with a decent grid and they've all got someone to race against. It doesn't matter if you're a radical or you're some sort of open wheeler, you'll find someone to race against.
Absolutely. It was really funny at Sandown. The first two cars was an SR8 Radical and a Toyota Racing Series FT50.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they diced for the lead all race. And I think one time the SR8 got over the line because it was just quick in a straight line, but then the FT50 was great around the first sector and passed them. So it was, you know, basically we're harking back to the old days, isn't it? Like state level, we used to have Formula Libre where you have Clubmans and Formula 2s and Formula Mondials and all that sort of stuff. And it used to be a real spectacle. So you sort of see, as you do with class racing, you see racing up and down the field the whole time. So, I mean, that's what we're going for. And, you know, we want it to be affordable and enjoyable as well. And we want to get some cool cars. You know, I'm a bit of an open wheeler guy, you know, that Krause. And, you know, I just want to get some cool cars out of the shed and get some racing on track.
We need to do one at the Bend, and which could, because there's a dozen Formula One cars over here, and some of them would race. Yasser Shahin's got a Formula Renault 3.5, which is probably the fastest racing car in the country at the moment. Well, I'd love to just see a big open single seater. You remember the Euro Boss series with all the old F1 cars and Indy cars and things like that? Yeah. It would be unbelievable to do a one off event like that at some point this year. So put that into your diary as well, mate. Just make that happen for us, would you? Because we'd be there with bells on for that. That would be incredible.
Like it was actually a bit upsetting because Yasser and his crew sort of contacted me about doing the Pyark 70th anniversary race meeting, but we can't get the car quiet enough.
Yeah.
And the thing would, and that 3.5, like that'd be lap record. You know,
oh, no, well, you don't want it there then.
No, come you don't on, want, you want it. You want it in the S5000.
How cool would it be though? Like, oh, the thing's is quicker than an F1 car around a corner, but they can't put mufflers on it. So I think it's 110 dB, that thing.
Yeah. And it needs to be, 95, 92 to run its
filter? 95. Yeah. And, you know, he can get away with it because he owns his own track, but he can't get away with it at Phillip Island because, you know, the Penguins have got to sleep and you don't want to disturb them. So,
yeah,
bit of a bugger, but oh well.
That thing would do 15s around there, probably quicker, I would have thought.
Probably at least 18s or something like that. It'd be amazing. Awesome.
Amazing. Tim Macro, congratulations on the weekend. Tremendous drive under some pressure, which was great and a handy lead. Three-time Australian Drivers' Champion, potentially. I know how much the history of all that means, and your old man raced in the Gold Star back in the day, and you've got two titles to your credit already. So it's a pretty cool thing to be targeting, really, isn't it? And a long way from where your career started too.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, I suppose we haven't, you know, we're not super wealthy sort of people. Dad's still next door working at the workshop, and he's 81. So for us to still be racing is just awesome. And, you know, we've ran our own cars, you know, most of our career. A couple of times I got to race with some cool teams. So we have come a long way, and I'm just really thankful to still be racing because I really enjoy it. And, you know, obviously in the next couple of years, I'll probably be just sort of transitioning out of doing that sort of full time and into, you know, running the team a little bit more. But, you know, while I can still do it and while I'm not, you know, on a walking stick or something like that, I'll jump in the car and have a crack.
I want to do an on the grid special with Peter Macro at some point because there's some great stories that need to be told there. Tim, thanks for joining us, mate. Always appreciate your time. Congrats on the weekend and look forward to catching up at one of the next 37 race meetings that you're at over the next year or two.
Thanks, guys. Cheers.
All right. You're listening to the On the Grid podcast. Richard Crowe, Mark Walker with you today. Tony Shebeki still MIA. He'll be back next week, we assume.
Maybe.
We've had some fantastic guests so far, and we always love having our next one on the show. And exciting times ahead for our next guest, because not only a new change of scenery, though the livery stays the same, it's an exciting reboot for Jack LeBrock, and he joins us on the grid. JLB, welcome back to the show, mate. Good to talk to you, and welcome to season 2022, my friend.
Yeah, thanks, fellas. It's good. I can't believe we're almost back into it again. It's come around very quick. So, can you get back cracking?
And similar sponsor, but new livery, new car, new change of scenery for you, and exciting times on Tuesday with the release of the Truck Assist Racing with Matt Stone Racing liveries for 22. And it's a good looking rig, as always, with a Truck Assist livery.
Yeah, definitely. It's so good to finally get it all out there. The like you say, the liveries was unreal, and the boys and girls there have done an awesome job. And yeah, it's really cool to be a part of the Truck Assist family again. And looking forward to the next couple of years and seeing what can unfold for us, especially this year, and building on that into 2023. So it was a great day.
Jack, you were there at the ground floor when Truck Assist was pretty much started as a brand in itself when they first signed on at Techno a few years ago now. That's for the Sandown 500. And since then, their investment, NTI's investment in the sport's really ballooned. And now to have two Truck Assist cars, it's pretty cool to see a brand that you've been associated with for so long really growing with the sport.
Yeah, definitely. It's pretty special. I think I feel like I'm part of the furniture there now. I know everyone in there at the office all fairly well, and that's great. I think we've got some pretty cool stuff planned for the year with the team there. And it's funny, I've still got my little name tag from the photo shoot we did a few weeks in there on the office desk deal. So every time I fire into the office, I'll claim that desk as my own. So she's good. I'm looking forward to a big year with the Truck Assist and NTI crew.
I was going to ask you about that, Jack, because some fine acting skills from yourself and Todd Hazelwood in the little promo video.
Acting, that was legit. He's in there. That's his day job. Now.
When I need my truck assistance, Jack, I expect you to be on the other end of the phone line.
Yeah, no, 100%, mate. I helped out probably a dozen people that afternoon, so I only had a quick, you know, half an hour call and time to do that. But you know, we got some calls done and locked it away. It was good fun. It was a bit of good banter between myself and Todd, and it was a funny day filming.
You guys have really grafted with sponsors, and you've sort of developed a really good core group of backers who followed you throughout the whole journey over different years and different classes and stuff. And Todd's in a very similar boat. You arrive here at Matt Stone. It's got some good vibes about it because it's a racy team. You guys, I think there's a lot of potential there for you guys this year.
Yeah, the vibe. It's great. The guys there at MSR have got a really good vibe going, and yeah, they're doing a great job. I think it's a massive credit to Maddie and Jimmy and everyone else there. Like, they've just make everyone feel so welcome, and all the sponsors and partners absolutely loved it. And like I say, we've got a really good core group of guys who've been there from the start. So back in Formula Ford, they're still carrying on, and they just love it, and are great supporters, and have helped me, I suppose, get to where we are. So it's pretty cool, and it's great to have Truck Assist now join that journey, and as well as Tyre Power. It's their first time in a sport on the car in supercars, so that's a pretty special moment as well for those guys. And so we're looking forward to hopefully bringing them some great results on track and having some fun doing it.
And you must have looked at that team, Jack, in the off season and gone, okay, well, last year there were some genuinely very strong results from Kostecki and Goddard in those two cars. There were some top 10 shootout appearances. There was some really strong race pace. So do you go there looking at it with the outlook of, we've really got something very, very solid to build on and generate some serious results as 22 builds on?
Yeah, 100%. I've seen that more being up there, especially the last few weeks, seeing how the boys operate and how they've been prepping the cars and how they're going about their business, getting ready even for their test day. So it's really good, I think. And as you say, they had some really strong results there last year. It's a customer 888 car, and they've gone out and got a few more go fast bits over the break, which is great. So looking forward to getting into the car and seeing what that brings. But you never know until you to rock up to the first round and you're on track with everyone else at the same time, same tire quality, all that sort of stuff. So myself and Todd, I think we'll work together pretty hard, and with the rest of the guys, and hopefully build a pretty strong relationship with everyone there. And be good to have some solid results.
The whole genre of 888 built Commodores, you had a couple seasons in them, so it's not something that's entirely new to you.
It's good. Yeah, there was cars that evolved a fair bit since then. So it'll be interesting to see what it's like actually getting back into the 888 car, where they've gone with it all, especially since they've been on this new single spring package and the Super Shock. So it'll be good though. I don't think their philosophy and the way they go about setting up the car will have changed too much, but there's only one way to find out. So I'm looking forward to the challenge, and I've learned a lot, especially last year. And that came, I suppose, down to Sammy Scaffi, the engineer I had. He was mega, and I suppose helping me learn a lot and get a lot out of it. So I'm looking forward into, I suppose, using that this year.
Yeah, and from an environment point of view, Jack, you've gone from a single car team at Techno to Tickford Racing, which is four or three cars, depending on what year it was. And now you're at a two-car squad, but it's a tighter, probably slightly smaller little race team, I guess, than what you've had for the last couple of years. So does it just feel like a happy sort of medium, I suppose, from the various supercar teams you've been in to this point in your career?
Yeah, definitely. I'm actually loving the vibe here at MSR at the moment. They're, like I said, a great bunch of guys and very easy to get along with, do anything and everything they can to help you and make sure you're comfortable in the car and get all the information and help you need to try and drive the car fast. So, I've done it all now, been to the single car, the big teams, and now back to the two-car team. And, I think it'll be good. We've got a great bunch of guys and girls there, and, looking forward to getting to know all of them more throughout the year. And, fingers crossed we can bring home some silverware at some stage.
Well, obviously silverware. You had a bit of that in 2020, had a win and back up on the podium at the Bend later on the season. Last year was a bit of a tougher one, but you ended really strongly. Like, you made it into the top 10 shootout there at Bathurst. So, it shows that you're able to turn things around.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there's a few things, bits and pieces going on there, but it was good. Like, Sydney Motorsport Park wasn't a strong round for the team as a whole last year for the Tickford guys. But, we had some really cool results, and I think we were able to take it to where Cam was, and he's definitely, you'd have to argue, in the top few in the field at the moment. So for myself, that was very confidence inspiring. So, fingers crossed we can keep building on that. And, I just had to keep learning, and every day is a school day. So I'm looking forward to getting the most out of it this year.
And Jack, they've started rotating some drivers through the Gen 3 prototypes as they pound around Queensland Raceway. Do you know when you're in line to get a steer of what I imagine will be the Chevy Camaro, now you're General Motors based, back on the red side of the ledger? Do you know when you're going to get a steer of that car, and what are your expectations about what it's going to be like, or what have you heard from chatting to some of your mates who might have had a steer?
Yeah, everyone we've seen in the media, it's been nothing but good stuff about them. They look like awesome cars to drive. They move around a lot, which is great. It's puts another aspect, I suppose, back into the driving style, and I suppose they've only been running it at QR, but even the attitude they have through turn one and turn two there is pretty cool. So are going to be pretty hairy over the top of the mountain at Bathurst and places like that. But yeah, definitely got my hand up for it. So yeah, been, I suppose. Waiting in line like probably the rest of us are here in Pete Lane, and I'm sure our time will come. So yeah, looking forward to it, and yeah, it'd be cool to see what they've come up with so far.
Do you reckon you'll be able to cut a lap of Sydney Motorsport Park with your eyes closed?
Yeah, I reckon. I've got the blindfold pack just in case. So usually I reckon you might go quicker with your eyes closed because you don't know. You might break a little bit later. You never know. back there again. Good old SLP.
Seriously, Jack, do you get sick of a racetrack if you go there that many times? Does it get to a point where you go, oh God, I want to turn left after turn one, not turn right? Or
don't do the wrong thing there. God, not that corner.
Oh, that'd make a mess of it. Yeah, no, probably not this year. We've had a good break. Probably got all that out of our system now. But yeah, last year it was good. I can't really say we can't complain about going racing, but at the same time, it would be nice to go to different tracks. But you know what? We made it work. We got through the season. But to be honest, I actually really like S&P. I know a lot of people aren't huge fans of the joint. And so I didn't have a massive issue with it. It was a bit of fun.
And they've talked, they've changed the tyre regs as well for round one, haven't they? So I think you get to play with the super duper soft Dunlop a bit in these 300K races, which is going to be a different strategic little battle for the teams to sort out.
Yeah, 100%. And I don't know, don't quote me on this, but I think the super soft tyre might have changed again. So everyone's pretty interested to see how that all goes and what's in store, because it's one of those things where we're rocking up into the race again, not knowing or running that tyre. So yeah, should be good. I'm looking forward to it. And it'd be interesting. At least we're going from the soft to the super soft this time, not from the hard to the super soft. Mm. So it'll be... Yeah, it won't be so crazy in lap time difference and stuff like that. But 300Ks straight off the bat, night race. It's going to be hard on the body. Like you're usually not conditioned at this time of the year, I suppose, to that level. It's hard to get used to driving a car and those sorts of bits and pieces. And it's something you develop throughout the year. But it's going to be crucial for everyone to be nailing the fitness as much as they can right now, because it's going to be a tough one on the body, I reckon.
Well, one last one from me, and this is a controversial take, but yourself and Todd Hazelwood, I think you've got the two best mums in pit lane.
Oh, yep. No, yeah. It's good. We should get a camera out the back with those two. It'll be good. They'll have a bit of fun, I'm sure.
The battle of passionate race mums at racetracks between those two. Yeah, you're right. That Supercar Media, there's an episode of Supercar's Life in that, I think. Just the two of them, just a locked off camera on the two of them for you and Todd, especially if you're carving each other up.
Yeah, no, Dre. Well, at least now I know me and Toddles, we've raced against each other plenty of times and banged a few doors along the way. So, at least I suppose now you're not meant to run into your teammate. So, fingers crossed, none of that craziness happens. But, it'll be good. We'll go out there, race hard and do our thing and, bring it back in one piece.
That's not a controversial opinion, Mark. I think it's fact about those two racing mums, for sure. Jack, congratulations, on the gig with Truck Assist Racing with MSR. It's a really good-looking two-car team. I think a lot of people have got yourself and Todd sort of just circled in the back of their minds as potential for some really strong results this year. So we're looking forward to it. Congrats on the launch. Look forward to seeing you back behind the wheel. I think as this podcast goes live, you will be doing a test day, I think, is the plan this week, so it'll be nice to get some laps again. Best wishes for the season, mate. We look forward to seeing you back at Sydney Motorsport Park in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, perfect. No, thank you, fellas. Looking forward to it. So see you trackside.
We've just been joined by Jack LeBrock. Great chat, Mark, with Jack, as always. He's a cool dude. He's at a point in his career where you feel like a big couple of results aren't far away. And from the outside looking in, we touched on it at the end of that chat, Matt Stone Racing looks like the real deal this year. Two very good drivers. Good commercial base in Matt Stone and Jason Gomesel. They've got smart ownership with the brothers of Stone hanging around in the background. So there's some pieces of the puzzle coming together there.
Yeah, they're very savvy on their sponsorship front. They do very well with their business to business. They get a lot of companies that are in similar sort of industries and they put them together and they make it work. And they've done a good job there this year. Obviously, last year they had two essentially rookie drivers because 2020, they split the seat and it was 2020, which was just a mess. At the best of times. So they're starting with two guys this year that have a lot of experience under their belt. They've been able to get rid of all the rookie mistakes, and they know what they're doing out there. So if they've got the support around them, they get the machinery, there's nothing going to stop them from pulling out some decent results during the year, I don't think.
They're the kind of combo that if you were still allowed to pair your level one drivers at Bathurst, a Hazelwood-LeBrock combo and a Matt Stone Commodore would actually be half-decent smoky for a Bathurst 1000, wouldn't it?
It's just not
got
wrong.
That, yeah, it's just got that strong package. Yeah, best of luck to that team. Good looking livery. Pretty hard to cock up a truck assist livery, if we're honest. We've been fortunate enough to work with them in the past, and if you can't do a truck assist livery well, you're not trying hard enough, clearly. It's been a busy week in motorsport. Gee, it was nice to go car racing, Mark. It might have been a scratchy Sunday down at Simmons Plains, but I cannot tell you how nice it was to be back at a racetrack.
Now, I've gone back through the Race Talk power rankings for the last three times we've visited Simmons Plains Raceway, and there's one common denominator in the knots, the phone reception.
Oh, utterly appalling.
Come on, we can make a difference here on the grid. We can get this fixed.
We can, and we have in the past.
At Winton.
Because at Winton Raceway, I believe it was 2018, the power rankings blew up. I reckon it was close to top of the knot was the phone service at Winton Motor Raceway. And just before the cancelled round in 2020, I got a message from Chris Lewis-Williams, who was the then CEO of the Benalla Auto Club. He's since left to go and set up a tyre power franchise in Benalla, believe it or not. So he's staying close. He got a message, and he sent me a message, and it was a clip from Telstra saying, your order for a mobile phone reception booster has been placed and will be in place on the dates of the round. Now, the round didn't happen because of Rona, but we incited change, Mark Walker. So this is my challenge to Motorsport Tasmania, to Donald Potter and the team down there. Next year, please improve your mobile phone reception, because the internet at that place was very, very, very poor. Aside from that, Simmons Plains is a tremendous racetrack, and it never gets old going there. I love that place.
How was the town? How was the vibe in town? What's Tasmania like at the moment?
Do you know what? It felt pretty normal.
Yep.
It didn't feel like there was
There appeared to be a lot of mask wearing around the track.
Yeah, so officially it was a masks-on event, and that's a Tasmanian government mandate for major events with a certain crowd figure. So it's masks on everywhere. Now, not everyone obviously did that, because that's the world we live in at the moment. But I think most people were pretty diligent about it. Certainly from a race team point of view, I reckon there would have been 90% compliance for the most part from mechanics, from engineers, working away wearing face masks. So I think that was really impressive. And whether you believe it works or not is irrelevant. That's what the government wanted. They helped fund the event. That was what made the event happen. So you had to do it. And I personally had no dramas doing that if it meant we could be at the racetrack. And I thought compliance was pretty good.
Now, the one thing about going to Tassie to start off a season, you're a big show there. Mm-hmm. You're a bit of a deal. Like, the media turns out, you get fans along. It's hard to sell if you go to Sydney Motorsport Park to try and kick off your season.
Yeah.
You roll into Launceston, they've got the media down there. They understand what's going on. They're used to big events coming to Simmons Plains and then being significant in the overall scheme of things in Tasmania. They don't have many national sporting teams. So when you roll up there with a few decent fields of racing cars, they pay attention.
Yeah, and the crowd was decent. It wasn't what it was last year.
Right. That might be the COVID of things.
Certainly, and there's definitely still COVID hesitance around. And that's not just from punters either. That's from race teams and drivers, for sure. So, yeah, there was the crowd wasn't as big as it was for Race Tasmania last year, but last year it was the first event after 2020 when everyone wanted to get over that.
Yep.
Tassie was still utterly COVID-free. And it was a rigmarole to get in there last year, which was fine, by the way, at the time. There's varying factors. And to be honest, the program in 2021 was better than it was this year because we were down Touring Car Masters, so you didn't have the drawing power of John Bow, who I reckon's worth 500 or 600 people a day through the gate.
Oh, just family and friends.
Yeah, exactly right. So it wasn't quite as big, but from an event perspective, it ran better, it was better organized, everything flowed smoother than it did. So I think the only problem where Race Tasmania is that it's so early in the season. And look, the Bathurst 12 hours usually the first weekend of February, and that is very early, but it's not part of a national championship. It's a couple of support categories in a 12-hour race, which in the past has predominantly been internationals. So there was some stress, especially in the S5000 world, and S5000 copped a lot for having nine cars there. But their last race was December 5. Yeah. So you turn around and you're racing on, what was it, February 12. You know, when you're taking travel into account, the fact that cars had to be down there basically 6 days, 5 days before the event, you've got 8 weeks max to build a program for the year ahead. So, and I'm not making excuses, it's a legitimate reason. So I think that hurt. There were 32 Trans Ams initially on the list, but we lost half a dozen because of timing and circumstance. And there were a couple of TCR cars that had the same problem. So it's pretty early in the season to run an event like that. It's better than running it on Australia Day like we did in 2021. So maybe there'll be some changes in the dates. I'm not sure.
But even looking forwards, we've already had Michael Clemente come out with his TCR program after the weekend for the subsequent rounds. Yep. Tim mentioned that a lot of drivers want to be involved with the S5000s at the Grand Prix, and that is one that will definitely bring cars out of the woodwork. So, you know, hopefully a few of those can tag on for the subsequent rounds after that.
Yeah, and look, you know, open wheel racing, people look back at open wheel racing with rose tinted glasses. And even in the peak of Formula Holden, when Scott Dixon was racing and people like that, they still only had seven or eight really good cars.
Yeah.
And then a bunch of privateers, and she was all over.
Yep.
So, you know, at Simmons Plains qualifying, I thought was a really good session. And you had the top six covered by about 0.2 seconds. It's pretty competitive. And Tim touched on it on his chat earlier on with how competitive Bathurst was. If you're half a second off the pace, you're seventh or eighth. So, as long as it's racy and it's competitive, which it is, I think it's okay, because when you've got three or four of those things battling together, and you've seen them live, it's pretty hectic stuff, for sure.
They're much better in the flesh. I mentioned earlier on in the show, I went out to Nyora Speedway on Saturday night to take in a bit of the local roundy-roundy out there, because I just haven't been able to do that in a long time, so I thought I'd go and see something new. But it happened to be that the series that Cam Waters has been competing in, and they had 18 or so cars, and he was quick time. Like, he went out there and qualifying and absolutely smoked them. So had dramas in the heats, and then had to start from the rear, drive his way through to sixth in the race. He put on a really good show. But the thing for mine out of that whole experience is, what a great branding exercise for Cam Waters, because a lot of the teams, they sell a T-shirt at the back of their trailer when the fans are allowed in there during interval. But the Waters team, they had a massive tent up the top of the spectator hill. And everyone there, the place was chockers. There was obviously hardcore Speedway fans who wanted to come out and see the sprint cars for the night, but also so many locals. You could just tell that they were locals because of, they're wearing the Nyora kit or whatever they were saying or doing. Yeah. It was very clear that they were just local people there for their night out.
Do you reckon the people that go, and I would argue that this is the same in Adelaide, that the people that go to the Speedway over summer, so here it's Murray Bridge Speedway, they're the same people that will 100% go and camp at the Bend and watch the supercars at the Bend?
No, these just look like people who lived around the corner and they literally walked over in
their
thongs.
That was their Saturday night,
And it was just their Saturday night out. But either they knew Cam Waters from Supercars and they were there supporting him. Yay, Cam, good show. Or they were Speedway people and they've gone, hey, this guy's all right.
Yep.
And they're now Cam Waters fans. And just judging by the amount of people that sort of gravitated him during the autograph session, huge, huge plus for his brand going out there and doing these things. And you see that with Kyle Larson in the States. He goes off and does all this Speedway stuff. And suddenly his fan base is all these Speedway guys, plus all the people who like him from NASCAR. So it's a good thing for him. And you look at Cam's social numbers, and he's got a lot of people on his socials. Like, he's got a fair old following. So hopefully he can parlay what he's done over the summer into some decent, more consistent results. He had some good results last year, but if he can bang those out consistently, he'll no doubt be a big shot this year.
I did smile when Jack said Sydney Motorsport Park wasn't the strongest track for Tickford Racing last year, because I think we nailed them a couple of times in the old Doric Power Rankings for a lack of performance.
Well, Jack nailed Cam as well.
True, he did, yes, correct. I'm going to bring it up. You're right, though. No, you're right. And the crossover thing's impressive. I'm fortunate enough to spend the weekend in Tassie with Molly Taylor as part of the team. And there's an athlete that has genuine crossover appeal in motorsport, full stop.
Yep.
So that was her first public appearance since winning the Extreme E title for Rosberg.
And doing Dakar Rally.
Exactly right. And lots of questions about Dakar. So, yep. and lots of people would ask for a photo, and I think that's great. And I love seeing drivers cross over and try and do other things.
Well, we've seen Brody up there running a sprint car up in Queensland, yeah. which is pretty cool. I mean, he's done a lot of asphalt roundy stuff over in the States, and he's obviously pretty good at that stuff. So,
well, even at the speed series level, Nathan Hearn has been in a sprint car four weekends in a row down in Tassie. So, and then jumped into the Trans Am car, and he'll be in S5000 at the Grand Prix, and I think Phillip Island as well. So they're all, I think more of them are gravitating towards it, aren't they? And if it wasn't for COVID, you could bet that SVG would be back in New Zealand doing some Western Springs Speedway midget stuff over summer as well.
He signed up to do ARC.
Yeah, that's a huge, huge thing, isn't it? And
it's Shane Van Gisbergen.
I know, right? He's the biggest name in the sport right now. And it's pretty surprising, isn't it? Is that the new ownership at T8, or the new management at T8 already changing the way they do things? Because Roland stopped him from doing a lot of extracurricular stuff. But a rallying's pretty bloody dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, I think he sort of had free play up to a point in the season. It was like up till Sandown or something, Shane can go and be Shane, but then he has to be serious for the championship. I think last year, after he smashed his arm and chest and everything else in and then proved to be driving the much better when he was broken.
Yeah.
What's it with mountain biking? What's it with mountain biking? Aaron Cameron.
Yeah, yep, correct. He timed that perfect. I spoke to Aaron about that, and he did. He said, oh, mate, I timed it perfectly a week later, and I would have been in real strife to race this weekend, but I broke it at the right time, if there is such a thing. But yeah, it's just don't do exercise. Simple as that. I think if we learn from anything, it's don't go and get fit. You'll get hurt. Just go and drive racing cars. You'll be fine.
Righto.
That's what it is. So there you go. We will follow the SVG story in the opening round of Australian Rally Championship in a couple of weeks' time. Anything else on the agenda, Mark, or should we wrap it up there?
Oh, I think we should wrap it up because it was a big weekend. A lot of time under safety car. God, that was frustrating on Sunday. The free-to-air window.
Calling it, mate.
You know, the free-to-air window, the four races they had, it was just galling. But anyway, that's life. They'll all pick up the pieces, and Phillip Island normally turns on a lot more cleaner races than that.
All I can say is try being the commentator for all that safety car stuff. Hard work, real hard work. Thank you.
No, thank you.
We look forward to maybe Tony joining us again with his presence next week. Honestly, don't know, but he'll be back at some point. You've been listening to On The Grid. Thank you very much, and we will see you next week. Bye for now.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production.
Tell your friends there's more at RadioLeMans.com.